Welcome to the Pillar Talk podcast, where two friends talk about Demon Slayer. I'm Josh.
I'm Matt.
What is up, Matt? Big episode today. Big episode.
Huge. There's a lot of stuff to work through.
Yep. So, let's not waste any more time. Let's delve right into episode 3 called Sabito and Makomo. Who are Sabito and Makomo? I don't know. We'll find out soon enough.
It never feels like I'm wasting time when I'm with you, Josh.
Right. So the episode starts with Tanjiro writing in his diary. Fairly uneventful scene, but it does sort of help to frame the rest of the episode, because as we'll find out later, the entire episode is a training montage. It's a recollection of Tanjiro's training, and it's sort of narrated by Tanjiro, a recollection of events. So it's almost sort of done, you could almost say that the entire episode is a flashback. Nezuko's sleeping by his side, and Urokodaki says, it's time to leave.
Yeah, and I think it's really cool, right? This whole concept of a montage, because normally in animes, you see montages are super fast paced. There's a lot of backing music. He gets from zero to swole in 10 seconds. But it was nice that they actually took the time and justice to show what was happening to Tanjiro over quite a significant amount of time this montage covered.
Yep. And no Eye of the Tiger.
No Eye of the Tiger
in this montage. Because, yeah, we call it a montage. It takes place over the entire episode. But before that begins, we have a little background, as explained by Urokodaki-san, about the Demon Slayers. So the Demon Slayers are actually an established core. So it's not like they are drifters or ronin as what I previously thought they were. They are an actual organization with hundreds of members. But they're not recognized by the government, so they are a shadowy, sneaky organization that protects the people.
Yeah, actually, what year do you think this is all taking place in Japan?
Last time.
It is definitely taking place in the past.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, Japan's always had this huge issue of formalizing their governments, right? It took them a long time before they became under one banner. So if you're operating across Japan... Yeah, it would make sense that they're not recognized by any form of government yet. But it's really interesting where they say they also have this super enigmatic leader.
Yep.
And the leader's been there, you know. Like they said, they've existed for hundreds of years, but they don't know who the leader is because he's a mystery box. Like what you get in a Kinder Egg. And you wonder, you know, is it like the same leader all this time? Is he super old? Like, are we going to see something like, you know, Bleach or Dragon Ball, where you have the super old masters, or yeah, it's a whole black box.
Ancient shadowy organization with a possibly ancient shadowy leader. Illuminati, right. Confirmed. we also get a bit of story about the demons, a little bit of backstory about the demons. Nothing that we don't know too much about already. They can heal, they can't be killed. They have amazing supernatural abilities, so they're like super strong and they've got loads of tricks up their sleeves. And there's only like two ways to kill them. So one, which we know already, is the sun. And another is using a special Demon Slayer blade that you have to use to behead them. Only then can you truly kill a demon. So not a lot of options. Kind of feels a little bit unfair, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And they even go into that a bit, right? Like, you know, they can heal, they've got the superpowers. The other one they introduced to was the fact that they can shapeshift and take new forms, which yes. We sort of see with Nezuko, because she's not shapeshifting. Well, it depends on how you define shapeshifting. Yeah. She can get bigger and smaller, but she can't like sort of take on a different shape or form, right? And they do wax a little bit of context where they say, you know, the demons can heal. And so the Demon Slayers are always in an uphill battle because their wounds can't heal, you know?
Yeah, they're just regular crappy humans.
Inferior models.
Prototypes of the real thing, demon supremacy. So if Tanjiro wants to kill demons, he's going to have to learn how to wield a blade, a Demon Slayer blade. And who better to teach him than Urokodaki-san, because he is introduced as a trainer. So Mr. Urokodaki-san is a trainer, apparently among many other trainers in Japan. And they all have like different styles.
Try to catch them all.
And in order to become a Demon Slayer, he's going to have to go through a final selection process that will take place at Fujikasane Mountain. And whether he can take that, so I guess it's sort of exam, right? And whether he can take part in that final selection exam, it really depends on Urokodaki-san. He's got to give him his permission before he can join.
Yeah, so he almost has two selections he has to work through, right?
Mm.
He has Urokodaki's selection, which is his first test, and then the actual final selection itself. But do you think that mountain is that Mount Fuji, or am I just being overly simplistic?
Oh, that's a good shout. I didn't actually notice it. Fujikasane. Yeah, it could very well be an allusion to Mount Fuji, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it's
And
Mount
I
Fuji per se, but maybe it's just a
yeah.
representation in this Demon Slayer world.
Yeah, possibly. And I think right after he explains that, at this point, this is where we see Tanjiro, I guess, leveling up, right?
Yep,
So
so this
he's
is where the training
now,
montage starts.
yep, this is now where, in the past episode, we are seeing him get beaten up by a mountain, and this time he's like running mad skills around this mountain,
Yeah,
right?
he's
He's
beating up the
got,
mountain.
that's right, single-handedly pimp slapping the mountain as he goes down. And we also see that the danger of all of the traps has increased significantly, right? Like previously it was just bamboo and logs, and now
Yeah.
knives are flying at him, there are spike traps. His sense of smell has gotten better. He's become a pro mountain descender, and he's going good at it. And but they do call out one very interesting thing, where it's been, how much time has passed now? I don't know if they've mentioned, but
No, not yet.
significant amount of time has passed. He's going really well down this mountain, but he's still not a trained swordsman, because they bring up that every time he holds his sword, it throws off his balance, right?
Yeah,
So that means
but
whatever.
before we get into that, yeah. So I just want to pull you back a little bit when we talk about how, yeah, he's going through the same training every day, basically. That the first time that he ran down the mountain, that's what he's doing again and again and again. The difference is that Urukadaki-san is increasing the difficulty of the traps, as you said, but they're getting significantly more murdery. Knives that are flying straight at Tanjiro, you've got pits with shards, and Tanjiro himself notes that Urukadaki-san is really out to kill him. So
Yeah, that was funny.
that's
Yeah,
some
he's gonna
hardcore
kill me.
training. Back to what you were saying, where now he's not just running down the hill, he's running down the hill with a sword.
Yeah, and this is the part where, he's, I think Urukadaki is, he's phasing his training, right? And the first part of the training was very much on your senses, on your skills, and all of that. Now, introducing him to the katana, and everything's, what we can see, what I like about it is it recognizes the fact that, oh, you just don't put a katana in somebody's hand and they're good at it.
Yep.
Because he even mentions just the act of holding the katana
Yep.
throws everything he's learned off by, like, 10 degrees or whatever.
Yep. It's not just about
And
using the sword. It's running with one, walking with one.
that's right, like the sword's a part of your everyday life. And I think this is the part where, he's mentioned he's swinging the sword 1,000 times a day just to practice. And then when he's done, Urukodaki just goes 500 more.
And this is after running down the mountain.
Yeah, he's nuts, man.
At this point, I just wonder what would have happened if he actually got killed by one of the traps. Would Rukadage-san have just gone, well, that's a day.
Well, another one.
He just like quietly goes back to the cabin and slits Nezuko's throat.
Oh, whoa, you okay?
No, I'm fine. Then we also get introduced a little bit to the katanas. I guess these are just regular katanas, right? The things that the sword that Tanjiro is wielding right now. And they explain a little bit about the katana's strength. It's a strong blade, but it's not very durable because these katanas apparently very easily snap. I wrote in my notes here, perpendicular force good, horizontal force bad. So he has to learn to wield his katana properly, because if his katana snaps, apparently so does every bone in his arm.
Because and that will be on Urukodaki-san's part. The katana wouldn't break his bone, he would break his bones.
Oh, you think so?
I think so.
I took it to mean that if he swung it wrongly, if he swang it swung swang, if he swung the katana wrongly and the blade broke. Oh yeah, I suppose.
Swung the. I think
Urukadaki
if
would.
he swung the blade wrongly, I think Urukodaki would just break his bones, because that sort of fits in very nicely with his teaching style.
Yeah, he's a teacher with no chill, I have to say. So then they have other training sessions, one which is called the Throwdown Ceremony.
Yeah, well, no,
Where,
before we go there, right? I
yeah.
think so. This is where we sort of throughout the episode where they're waxing in and out of the journal sort of
Yeah.
format, right?
Yeah.
So we get a small scene where we're cut back into Tanjiro. He's still writing in his journal, looking over at Nezuko, and then we're introduced to a new superpower that he has, where he can just sleep sitting up straight with his journal.
That is indeed a superpower, which I have, interestingly
Do you
enough.
know?
No, I don't.
Are you a Demon Slayer?
If only that those are the qualifications.
But yeah, now we get into right now we go into fall training, and it's just he's
Yeah.
getting beaten up, man. He's just
It's
getting beaten
called
up.
the Throwdown Ceremony. Okay, before we get ahead of
Yeah.
ourselves. So the Throwdown Ceremony is basically Tanjiro getting ragdolled by Urukadaki-sama, Urukadaki-san over and over and over again. It's not a question of whether he gets thrown down. It's a question of how well he recovers after he's thrown down.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the throwdown ceremony.
Yeah.
So it's just an entire day of just getting thrown onto the floor.
And beaten up in the sternum. Like
oh,
every
yeah.
time he's standing, just like bam, punch straight into the sternum, and then after that I'm gonna throw you down, kid. And
no, that's the next training. The next one is because he introduced the anime as well as Urukadaki-san introduces breathing techniques and styles. And this is where we first learn about total concentration breathing, something that's going to be very, very important. I think it's a core element of Demon Slayers as we move forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we learn that Urukadaki-san wants to pass down to him the 10 breath of water forms. And then he teaches him how to breathe, essentially.
And who knew that breathing would be so difficult? He got beaten up for breathing wrong.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
He's like, okay, there's a little instructional video on how to breathe properly. And then Tanjiro attempts it and goes, is it like this? And Urukadaki-san goes, no, and just punches him in the stomach.
Yeah, literally, right? And like, can you imagine? Put yourself in that scenario, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're there. Somebody's telling you all about this breathing technique called total concentration breathing, and that water breathing is a style. And then you stand there and he says, okay, breathe. And how do you breathe differently, right? So you just breathe. And then when you breathe, wrong!
Punches him right in the stomach. Yeah,
yeah.
But why is this breathing so important? So apparently it's to help, it can promote healing, which I think is quite interesting because it does have ties to very real world theories, right? That when somebody learns how to breathe properly, it elevates your entire mind, your body, your spirit. You are able to promote better bodily functions as well if you really take the time to breathe every day. I suppose that's why meditation is a thing.
Yeah, it's really cool, right? There's proper scientific studies that are done where they're taking a look at people who practice meditation and breathing, and while two people, one who meditated and one who didn't, has the same impulse reaction to, let's just say, pain, but the pain impulse dissipates or goes away so much faster in the person that meditates because they're able to basically control the way their brains are processing a lot of these signals. And I think the scene also introduces us to the fact that Urukadaki-san is he's a water style guy, right? So I'm training you in water style.
Mm-hmm.
And then you begin to wonder now, like, are there different styles?
Yeah, because we don't exactly know if there are other styles or if everybody is just water style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have, in the next scene, Urukadaki-san and Tanjiro standing on a cliff near a waterfall. And Urukadaki-san goes, now you have to be one with water. And he kicks Tanjiro into the lake, miles below the cliff.
And I loved it that when Tanjiro hits the water, and he's floating. He's doing the dead man float, right? Back up.
Are you sure? Are you sure that's a dead man float, or was he just temporarily? Was he temporarily dead?
Either way. I mean, like, he's there, not moving. Back up to the sky. Urukadaki is just like, yep, this is going to plan.
And I also like how in this sequence, he's using Nezuko as a mantra. So while he's going through the training, he's standing underneath the falls, the waterfall, getting pounded by the water, and he's going, Nezuko!
I do that sometimes too.
What, you just...
Moving on. So the next sort of part we sort of see is like, they mentioned now that Nezuko's been asleep for 6 months since the battle with the last demon at the shrine, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of lets you know that this is the passage of time. It's been 6 months, and I think that's the point of this, right? I've been training for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. She's been unconscious for 6 months. And I don't know if it's a translation issue, but there's this part in the subtitles, because Tanjiro says that they promptly called a doctor. Now, I don't know in what universe 6 months is considered prompt. Well, there you go. A doctor comes after 6 months, promptly, but they don't know what's wrong with Nezuko. I doubt that they even mentioned that she was a demon doctor. So I don't know how that works.
Mm.
Yeah. And Tanjiro says that he's scared every day that she's dead. But
yeah.
But she's not, so it's fine.
It's so sad, right? To think about it. Like, you know, oh, one day you're perfectly fine, you're sleeping, there's nothing I can do for you. But one day you might just be dead. And to have that weigh on you every day, that's nuts. That's pretty harsh.
Yeah.
So at this part now, right, they do show he's progressing through the mountain again, right?
Yeah.
So more time has passed. he's zooming down the mountain again, avoiding the traps. But there's one huge difference where in the past, where he's been super defensive in the way he descends the mountain, now there's been a shift where he's becoming more offensive. So he's wielding the katana, doing his training, making his way down the mountain like he's done a million times before. But this time, he's using the katana offensively to deflect the knives, to break through the traps.
I would still consider that defensive. He's still blocking traps, but yeah, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. He's attacking the threats head on. But at this point, a year has passed in the mountain. 1 year on, Urukadaki-san says, "There's nothing left to teach. You now know everything that I know, and now you just need to master what you learned on your own. Peace out."
Yeah, peace out, kid. Get wrecked. But like, do you really believe that? Like, there's no way he could teach him everything in a year.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought as well. I thought it was quite fast. But I think it is possible in the sense that you know how they talk about like how certain things are easy to learn but difficult to master? Maybe this could be one of those things where I've taught you all the basics. Now it's up to you to sort of improve on it or expand on it. And there are a lot of different ways that you can do this. And it's up to you to figure out how to do it. So it's, yeah, it might be possible.
Yeah, it could be. But I think, like, I don't know, like in the year, all of the training was very much, body and spirit. But like, there was never, Urukadaki never went into like the whole politics or nature of the demon world, how the demon cores work, or things like that,
Maybe they just didn't show it.
Maybe he just didn't do it. Because, I mean, that would fit into his character for me, right? Like, I'm only here to train you, this is all I do.
Storytelling, but maybe they told Tanjiro everything, but they don't want to tell the audience everything.
Rude.
So we get to the final test. Not Tanjiro's final test, but Urukadaki's final test for Tanjiro. And what he has to
So, sort
do.
of like Tanjiro's final test.
Well, he'll have many more tests after this, but
Oh, yes.
for this episode, it's the final test. And he's got to slice an absolute massive rock in two.
GG
I'll say that
easy.
again. An absolutely massive rock into two.
Say it one more time.
An absolutely massive rock. A unit of a rock. He's got to slice it into two. Then he can join the final selection. So, Urukadaki-san says, "Cut this in half. Goodbye." So.
Literally, mic drop. I'm out, kid.
Yeah. Obviously, Tanjiro does the logical thing when he's told he has to slice a rock in half. He does it, or he tries to do it, and it goes about as well as I might expect. He brings the sword down, it clangs against the rock. Pretty much what all of us expected, right? Pretty much what would happen if any of us swung a sword at a rock. Nothing happens.
But
Yeah.
what was interesting to me is like the sword didn't break.
He nearly broke.
This is true.
And he practices from that point onwards, he practices every day. He practices his breathing, he does his squats, he does his push-ups. He basically goes through the whole One Punch Man routine without any of the results. So shame on Tanjiro. And it's 6 months of absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and what I really like about the way the animators bring that to life is like across the duration of this episode, they're showing the accumulated training damage on his hands, on his face. And in so many other shows, you're just like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna go through some training and then I'm done and I'm fresh as a flower after that, right? But then they do it so well. And it's across the entire series how they show the accumulated damage and the accumulated wear and tear on their bodies as they're going through things.
Until they hit an inn and then they consume some
Reset.
potions. Yeah,
Yeah, you
reset.
rest.
Yeah. So he's doing his training. He's still training every day for 6 months, and I assume a good majority of that time is spent trying to break the rock into two. But every time he swings his sword onto the rock, it goes about as well as the first time. He's just not making any headway.
He should have used his head.
He did. Eventually he did. We have a scene where it's really focused on him and the rock, and he is super discouraged at this point, right? He's screaming and he says he wants to give up and he starts to headbutt the rock. Not gonna lie, I thought at this part at this point he would have broke the rock in two with his hit. But no, that doesn't happen. And he's screaming, whining and crying, and then he's suddenly interrupted by a random lad sitting on top of the rock who was never there before. And this boy is wearing a fox mask, so very mysterious, and he basically interrupts him by asking him to shut up.
Yeah, right. It's rude. It's just like, I'm interrupting you. Shut the fuck up.
Those were the first two words ever said to Tanjiro. Shut up.
But what was really interesting about the fox, person in the fox mask was that when they appeared, like two thoughts that immediately came into my head was the why does a mask have a scar? That's weird. And then the Tanjiro said that this fox had no scent.
Didn't
And for
smell him.
somebody to have been, yeah, couldn't smell him. And for somebody who's been training for about a year and a half now, and his sense of smell has gotten a lot better, why can't he smell this kid?
Maybe he's just very clean.
Yes.
And the kid starts really laying Tanjiro verbally first. It's like he's calling him, he's basically saying that he doesn't live up to the measure of a man. Right, he's calling him whiny, feeble, immature. And as he's saying this, he attacks Tanjiro, not just with words, but with legs. So he kicks him. Yeah, so Tanjiro is like getting whacked by this guy. And the kid asks Tanjiro, "What are you doing out here?" And Tanjiro says, "I'm training." And we have this Neo Morpheus moment where the kid goes, "Show me." Tanjiro doesn't want to at first, because the kid is now brandishing a wooden sword. And Tanjiro, of course, has a real katana, so he's like, "I might hurt you." And the kid laughs. He says, "You can't beat me, because I can cut the rock." So they spar, and this kid's good, dude. This kid's good. He's like bouncing all over the place, and he knocks Tanjiro to the ground.
Yeah, I think the animation fight style between Tanjiro and this kid was so clean, right? And
Yeah.
like, I don't know if it's the way to say it, but he got beaten up beautifully, right?
Yeah.
And it's like from the way he, and I think this is the scene where the as they're jumping back and forth and fighting each other, that crisp style which we know the series for, and the final move at this scene was the kid in the fox mask swinging his sword upwards beautifully and clocking Tanjiro right on the chin.
Yep, but before that, so he says that Tanjiro hasn't learned anything that Urukagaki-san has taught him, like really learned it, especially total concentration breathing. That seems to be the most pivotal part of a Demon Slayer's training. So it establishes here that the kid knows Urukagaki-san. Apparently, like all the information and the knowledge that Tanjiro has, the kid says, "You have memorized it as knowledge. You didn't impart it into your body, so I'm gonna beat it into you until your body knows everything that you've learned." So they start fighting. Tanjiro is complaining. He says, "I've given it my all, but with all the training I've done, I just can't break through. I just can't move on." And the kid comes back with the worst advice ever. He says, "Just move on." Like, okay, thanks a lot.
Right? And that's like it's funny, right? Like all of the training that you will see in other shows, it's so encouraging. And in this show, it's literally, I trained you, I'm done. You can't do it, just do it.
So they keep clashing swords, and then the kid gets the upper hand. He knocks Tanjiro out with the most colossal uppercut, upper swing. So Tanjiro is knocked out, and then just off screen, somebody else walks in, and it's a girl this time, with a cat mask. However, she's not wearing the mask fully. It's like just sort of off to the side of her head, so we can see her face. And then the boy says to the girl, "Now you take care of him." And we open up to Tanjiro, presumably a few hours later on the floor, and he wakes up to her just staring at him. I guess that's one way to take care of somebody, but.
Not creepy at all.
Yeah, but
And this is, and like at this scene, this is where we start to, it's this whole concept of tough love, right? And between the guy in the fox mask and the girl in the cat mask, they go into that old, good cop, bad cop routine.
Exactly. He wakes up, he sees her staring at him, but instead of being angry, he's like super amazed at the other kid's strength. And he's wondering to himself as well as asking her if he can ever be that strong. And she says, "Of course you can, because I'm gonna watch over you."
Oh, is that what she said? I'm gonna watch over you.
So we find out that the girl's name is Makomo, and the boy's name is Sabito. And Makomo is a lot less harsh in her training. So she's tutoring Tanjiro in a lot more helpful ways, as compared to Sabito, who is the epitome of tough love. I don't even know if it's love at this point, it's just the epitome of tough. And we find out that they have a mysterious past, right? That they're orphans.
Yeah, that's right. This is where we understand that Urukadaki had basically, I don't know, informally adopted them or trained them basically. So we know that this isn't really his first rodeo in terms of how many students he's had, and he's had quite a few of them, and they all seem to be around the same age as Tanjiro.
The other kids, and apparently they're all watching him.
Yeah, so that part was weird, right? Because you start to put a few of the dots together, and you're just like, all right, this kid has no scent, and they were all Urukodaki's students, but then Tanjiro's the only student right now, and these kids are really young as well. And then they say stuff like, "Oh, we are always watching over you." And you're just beginning to wonder, like, what or who exactly are you, kid?
Makomo is a lot more helpful in the way that she teaches Tanjiro. She explains to him a lot more about total concentration breathing and how it can make a human almost as strong as a demon.
Yeah, that's right. And it brings it out, right? Like she mentions that this is the latent power within humans. So, you know, are humans just like, you know, the iPhone 3 to the iPhone 10, and the iPhone 10 are what the demons are? Was there an iPhone 10? There wasn't an iPhone 11. Whatever, you get what I'm trying to say, right? It's like there's this unlocked power inside every human that allows them to reach almost this demon-like potential.
It's like uploading new software into old hardware.
That's right.
And so Tanjiro asks, how do I achieve this power? How can I achieve this power? And there's no shortcut. He's got to work out and he's got to lift more.
Get swole, kid.
Then we also, of course, have more montages of Sabito and Tanjiro sparring. And it's another 6 months. He does this for another 6 months. And we are finally brought to a fateful night where we have Tanjiro challenging Sabito for presumably the last time. And Sabiro has a real sword this time. None of that wooden sword nonsense. He's got a real sword. And he's a lot less condescending. So I suppose 6 months does help to deepen the relationship a little bit.
And this is the part as well, right? Just like, oh, how can I get better? How can I train? But just before this, and it's just literally, yeah, you have to train to death. That's all you have to do.
No shortcuts.
Just die, and then you'll get it.
And Tanjiro makes an insightful observation. One-on-one combat is very simple. Whoever is stronger and faster wins. Lots of
He's not
gems,
wrong.
lots of gems in this episode.
He's not wrong.
No, he's
You're
not.
faster, you win. You want to get better? Train.
So in the blink of an eye, for the first time ever, as Sabito and Tanjiro lunge at each other with their swords, Tanjiro's blade touches Sabito for the first time, and he slices downwards and he cuts Sabito's mask right down the middle. And we see his face for the first time, Sabito's face for the first time.
So like it's a kid's face, right? And this is kid who's been waxing so much on Tanjiro about you're not a man, you're a piece of shit, you gotta get good. And here we have this kid, it's just like, you know, he looks like he's just gonna be playing on the street. But what was interesting is that his face also had the same scar that was on his mask. And then immediately my thoughts are just like,
How does that
why?
work?
Yeah, why? Why does your mask have the same scar as your face?
Stylistic choices?
Yeah, continuity. And it's also at this point we also begin to see it, right? Like Tanjiro says he looks both happy and sad at the same time. And then you're like, I can understand why you're happy because now the student has done good enough, but why are you sad? Like, why is this kid sad that Tanjiro's managed to do this? What do you think?
I think it was sort of explained a bit later that it was relief. That the words they used were happy and crying at the same time. I guess that relief was sort of overwhelming.
But that should be the happy, right? The relief.
Well, it could be a worry that it's so deep that it manifested itself like in utter joy. So the crying might not be a sad kind of crying, but it's like, yeah, it's there's so much relief that it just manifested itself as tears.
Okay. I don't know. I didn't see it that way. I felt like, you know, there's a recognition that there is a sadness that's going to come into Tanjiro's life now that he's been able to cut, you know, he's been able to beat him.
Well, that's deep,
Yeah,
so
because he
deep.
recognizes now that, all right, kid, you're good enough. You're good enough to take on what life is going to throw at you, and it's going to be a lot of shit.
That's deep, man. You're the Marinara
The
Trench.
Marinara. The Marinara.
And yeah, so Sabito doesn't really say anything. At least I don't think he says anything. I don't recall him saying anything. But Makoto says, congratulations. And as she's saying this, there's a fog, a thick fog that rolls in all around them. And she says, with her final parting words, beat him for us. And as the fog closes in, they both disappear. So before we move on, did you make anything out of it? When she says, beat him for us, like who is this him?
Yeah, and I think this is the foreboding, right? They're introducing it right now in this episode, but we have absolutely no concept of who this him is at this point.
Do you think that they want us to think that it's Urukodaki-san? Because it's the only other hymn that we can think of at this point.
I don't know. They speak of Urukadaki so fondly that you wouldn't think about, you know, beat him. And then Urukadaki already said, I'm done training. Nothing left, kid. So like to that, you're already like, yeah, so he's not going to fight him. And so my thoughts immediately didn't go to Urukadaki, but just wondering who is this him and what's going to come.
Yep.
And like, you know, when they disappear and then like to me, right, it's just like, what's the story so far? Tanjiro has been alone in the woods for 1 year trying to cut a stone.
Talking to then, rock ghosts.
Right? And like, you know, they disappear and he's just like to me, just like, am I going fucking crazy?
Might very well be.
I'm losing my mind, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I go crazy too, 1 year in the forest by myself trying to cut a rock.
But he doesn't have to try anymore because the camera pulls back, the slice that cut the mask of Sabito in half was actually the same slice that cut the rock. He did it, Matt. He did it.
He did it. He cut the rock and he didn't use his head.
You know, the same way that people loosen jars for somebody else? It's like they can't open the jar the first time and then somebody else opens it and then you go, oh, I loosened it for you. Maybe his head created enough structural integrity damage that he could slice it later.
Or was the rock even cut at all? Maybe he just saw it because he wanted to see it.
What, after he bashed his head against the rock, he was seeing things, is it?
I think that's it. You know, after he bashed the head on his rock, he actually passed out and all of this happened in his head. When he woke up, it's actually broken because his head did it.
For 6 months.
In a coma.
And that's how the episode ends. Ooh, that's a good episode.
It was a really good episode because they devoted so much time. And it's like this one episode, it's meant to cover 2 years worth of time passing, 2 years worth of training, and a little bit of backstory into Urukadaki, his previous students, and some of the techniques that are used by Demon Slayer. So it's introducing a lot of concepts, but the way they did it in this journal format, I really loved it, right? Because the whole episode was retold in a journal story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really liked the way that they managed to condense 2 years worth of, I guess, plot into a single episode. It was fantastic.
Yeah, they packed so much into this episode. Like I told you before the podcast started that I had 10 pages worth of notes. And by the time I was done writing all of this, I think my arm hurt as much as Tanjiro's trying to cut that rock.
You need to train to death.
Yeah, we both have the same thoughts. The way that they told the story through the diary, it's essentially a recollection of memories. It sort of shows a bit of Tanjiro's introspection as well. I don't know if they ever call back to this again, whether he still keeps a diary after, but for the intents of this episode, they did it well.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And also worth noting that Nezuko's still asleep after 2 years.
Oh yeah, I wonder how she's getting on.
That'll be next episode.
Should we do a rating? Do we want to rate this episode? What are you going to rate it?
I think my rating for this is because Tanjiro kept a journal and I really liked the way they told that story in the journal. And I would publish this, so I would rate it like a top tier scientific journal, like Science Direct.
Peer reviewed?
Peer reviewed. How would you rate it?
Matt, how would I rate this? I'd say this episode rocks. And that was it for the Pillow Talk podcast. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Josh.
And I'm still Matt.
And we'll see you all in the next one.
Better be there.